Well, you've been there for 3 years. You should have never started it. You could have made a deal. Donald Trump's words of advice for Ukraine last night, just hours after a meeting between senior US and Russian officials. In response, the Ukrainian president said that Mr. Trump was living in what he called a disinformation space. In a further sign of America's shifting approach to the world, the US Secretary of State won't attend this week's summit of G20 foreign ministers in South Africa. Marco Rubio said his job was to advance America's interests, not waste taxpayers' money or coddle anti-Americanism. Ireland's Minister for Foreign Affairs, Trade and Defence, Simon Harris, will be in Johannesburg, and Tánaiste joins us now from the Doyle studio. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rachel.
We'll come to the G20 in a moment, but first of all, what's your reaction to this intervention from Donald Trump, in which he appeared to blame Ukraine for starting and continuing the war?
Well, look, I think anyone who attempts to blame Ukraine is clearly engaging in a revisionism on speed. I mean, the reality here is there's only been one aggressor in relation to this brutal, illegal invasion, and that is Vladimir Putin, who took a decision to invade a peaceful neighbouring country on the continent of Europe. And Ireland and the European Union, and indeed the United States, had stood in solidarity with Ukraine and with the people of Ukraine. I do think when it comes to rhetoric and commentary, though, I do think we need to be calm in our response, and we need to differentiate perhaps between comments that are made overnight and the reality on the ground. And the reality is everybody wants to see peace. Of course they do. But how peace is brought about matters. You cannot disregard the territorial independence or sovereignty of a country. You can't disregard the UN Charter. And you can't disregard the views of the European Union and European Union member states when this is indeed a war on the continent of Europe.
Given what you say, do you believe that the process started by the United States, that it can lead to a just and sustainable settlement?
Well, I think the phrase you use, just and sustainable, is exactly correct. I mean, whatever process is put in place here has to bring about a peace that is enduring, and that absolutely will last. Of course, the United States have a right to speak bilaterally to whichever countries they wish. But in terms of any process around peace, Ukraine clearly have to be in the room, and so too does Europe. And when I meet with my European counterparts and the High Representative for Foreign Affairs from the Commission in South Africa in the hours ahead, and indeed when we have a Foreign Affairs Council meeting on Monday, you can be absolutely sure that Ukraine will be top of the agenda in terms of working out how best the European Union can speak with one voice on this extraordinarily important issue.
Is there, though, at the moment any clear consensus on how Europe can become part of this process?
Well, I think it's important to acknowledge that Europe and European Union member states, including Ireland, have already played a very significant part in assisting Ukraine. Indeed, through taxpayers' money being used by all member states, through assistance being sent. Ireland is obviously militarily neutral, so we've sent non-lethal assistance. Other countries in the European Union that are part of NATO and part of military alliances have sent equipment as well. So Europe has very much been with Ukraine from the very start of this brutal invasion 3 years ago. We can't forget the fact that while this is a war on Ukraine and on the territorial integrity of Ukraine, it is in many ways a war on Europe. Because if you meet counterparts, as I do, in Latvia, in Estonia, in Lithuania, in Poland, in Eastern Europe, they too wonder, you know, where does Putin stop? So we cannot actually deploy the failed policies of the past when it comes to dealing with aggression, when it comes to dealing with illegal wars. We live in a world that does have international law, does have a UN charter. And I think there's huge solidarity across the European Union in terms of speaking up and speaking out for those principles.
Do you trust Donald Trump on this issue?
Well, I spoke to President Trump in November to congratulate him on his election, and he is the democratically elected president of the United States. And Ireland and Europe will, of course, work with any democratic leader, including President Trump, and will work in a constructive way. What I definitely know is this: President Trump does want to see peace. I don't doubt him in relation to that. And conversation I had with him, he was very clear on that. He doesn't like to see war. He doesn't like to see conflict. The point I would respectfully make, though, to our colleagues in the United States, it's how you bring about peace matters. And any peace process has to absolutely be on the terms of Ukraine, in terms of recognising that they are the sovereign nation that was invaded. And this is not about two neighbours having a bit of a dispute. This is about one sovereign country in Europe that has been brutally invaded by Russia. And that has to be recognised in terms of any process to go forward. And Europe can't be silent in relation to this. And Ireland wants to play a constructive role as a member of the European Union in speaking up for these values that we always have when it comes to our foreign policy.
Would Ireland be prepared to send soldiers to take part in a peacekeeping force in Ukraine?
So a couple of things on that. I mean, I think the first thing is, and I will answer the question directly, but the first thing is we can't jump to that because I don't think we can buy into the premise that there's kind of a peace process underway.
Other countries have been speculating about it. As you know, yeah. Keir Starmer said he would be willing to send soldiers. Some others said they wouldn't.
Sure. So I've seen no evidence yet that Putin wants peace. But let me deal with your hypothetical question. If there was a peace process in place and there was a peacekeeping mission, of course Ireland shouldn't recuse itself from being part of that conversation. Now, we have very strict and clear rules around peacekeeping, including a UN mandate, a mandate from the Oireachtas and a mandate from the government. So the honest answer is we're not at this point yet, but we certainly shouldn't recuse ourselves from being part of that conversation should we get to that point.
Your party colleague, Jennifer Carroll McNeill, said this morning that in her view, Ireland should double its spending on defence. Do you agree?
Well, she's right. Minister Carroll McNeill is correct. And we've already started that process of significantly increasing defence spending. In fact, I think we've increased it by about 30% over the last number of years. And this year's defence budget of 1.35 billion is the highest ever. But there's a lot more we need to do. And Rachel, just because we're militarily neutral and we value that military neutrality, there's no sense of changing that. There's no wish to change it. That's beyond discussion. It's not being changed. But just because we're neutral doesn't mean we don't need to take defence and security more important. More seriously. Doesn't mean we don't need to monitor what happens across and around our coastline and at sea. We need to invest in radar. We need to invest in sonar equipment. As recently as this week, I met generals in the Irish Defence Forces to talk about how we can speed up those processes in terms of making sure that we have the infrastructure for the Irish Defence Forces to play the important role that they need to play in terms of being able to monitor the likes of undersea cables and work with other countries like Iceland in relation to this. So we're on a trajectory of significantly increasing spending on defence and security.
As you say, the overall defence budget for this year is just over 1.3 billion euro. Will more money be added to that later in the year?
So obviously there's processes to go through, but there are two opportunities for additional funding for all government departments, including for our defence forces this year. The first and perhaps most important from a defence point of view will be the review of our National Development Plan, Ireland's capital plan, if you like. And government has committed to carrying out that process by July.
OK, so there is a chance then that later on in the year, extra funds will be added to the 1.3 billion.
Well, we've already allocated 1.3 billion for this year, but we have committed under the Commission on the Defence Forces to getting to a budget of 1.5 billion by 2028. I do think the world has changed even since that agreement was put in place. And I think we do need to show real form when it comes to defence and security spending. We also need, I think, to look at some of the commitments we've given in terms of procuring the likes of radar and sonar equipment for our naval service. And we need to make sure that's delivered in a more efficient manner. And that's an absolute priority for me.
And to those then who do fear that Ireland military neutrality is being chipped away at, what would you say?
I'd say that it categorically is not, and we must be very clear on that. And when I engage with counterparts in Europe and indeed beyond, there's a great respect for Ireland's military neutrality. There's a great respect for the very positive role we play in peacekeeping. But there also has to be a recognition, and I believe there is by the public, that we do need to protect ourselves in terms of cyber attacks and cyber threats. We've seen the impact of that on our public services in the past from hybrid attacks and indeed from, I mean, how would we feel in this country if a situation happened with one of our cables underseas off our coast? So being militarily neutral doesn't excuse you from being part of a conversation. In fact, you have an even greater obligation perhaps to invest more in your own defence and security.
You're travelling to the G20 meeting of the world's largest economies. It's taking place in South Africa. Now, ordinarily, Ireland would be represented by the European Union. So why are you going?
So Ireland has been invited for the first time ever to participate in the G20. The country that has the presidency of the G20 has a right to invite some guest nations. And Ireland has been chosen by South Africa to join as a guest nation the G20 this year. And I'm going for a very simple reason. I think now more than ever, it is extraordinarily important that Ireland engages in every global fora possible when it comes to issues like trade, investment, jobs,
climate. And of course, the issues we've been talking about in relation to Ukraine and indeed the pressing issues in relation to the Middle East. For Ireland to have a seat at the table can only be in our national interest. And of course, my visit will be followed on by visits by our finance minister and the governor of our central bank and many others during the course of the year. There's a real opportunity for Ireland to engage with very major economies right across the world.
As you mentioned trade, just last night when asked about tariffs on pharmaceuticals and computer chips, Donald Trump said it'll be 25% higher and it'll go very substantially higher over the course of a year. That must worry you.
Well, look, I'm very alert to the fact, as is the Irish government and the European Union, to the fact that the United States has adopted a more protectionist approach to trade. But I'm also very convinced that we can win the argument in relation to this in terms of constructively engaging with the US about how the relationship between Ireland and the US and the US and the European Union is a two-way street. And just to give you an example, there's 115,000 people employed right across the United States in the top 10 Irish companies that have invested in the US. And last year, Irish companies invested more than €350 million in the US economy. So President Trump is fundamentally at his core a businessman. And I think he understands the fact that the Irish-US relationship from a trade point of view is very beneficial for very many people who voted for him. And we will use our St. Patrick's Day trade missions, plus the new structures I've put in place in terms of a trade forum and an advisory group, to make sure we position this country correctly when it comes to the new reality around trade.
You're due to go, I think, to Philadelphia and New York for St. Patrick's Day. Is there any sign yet of the Taoiseach getting an invitation to the White House?
And my understanding is that the work on the ground in terms of our own embassy in Washington and the likes is proceeding as normal. There tends not to be a big moment of an invite dropping. It tends more to be a little bit closer to the time. But our working assumption here is that the visit will proceed as planned. And we're very much looking forward to our Taoiseach having the opportunity to engage with the President of the United States.
You're not concerned at all then that Donald Trump and indeed his staff will see this as an opportunity to make a point?
Well, in my conversation with President Trump back in November, he spoke of the warmth that he has for Ireland and for the Irish people, and indeed the appreciation he has for this country, where, of course, he has done business before. So I know that in the last Trump administration, the St. Patrick's Day visit was put in place each year by the Trump administration. And I don't have any evidence or information to suggest that this situation will be any different.
Simon Harris, Taoiseach and Minister for Foreign Affairs, thank you for joining us on the news at 1.